So tonight in our lesson books, we're on lesson number 22. And that lesson is centered around Leviticus chapter 16. If you'd like to turn there. Lesson 22 and Leviticus 16. And everything in this lesson tonight will come from Leviticus chapter 16. And the title of the lesson is The Day of Atonement. Does anybody know what the Jews called that day? They still call it that, and they still practice it. Yom Kippur. And even though most of the the temple and the sacrificial system of the Jews has really all but disappeared, they still do recognize and practice Yom Kippur, and that remains one of their holiest days of the Jewish year. What time of the year would that be as it relates to our calendar? Yeah, late September, early October is when that falls in our calendar. I would say that this is probably the most pivotal chapter in Leviticus. And I say that because what it means to us today as Christians, really the book of Hebrews hinges on. So going back to the day of the Levitical priesthood, we've been reading and studying about all these sacrifices that they have to make on a daily basis, and the type of clothing that the priests have to wear when they go about their daily business of making sacrifices for the people and for themselves. This particular day, though, is different. It's a special day in that it only happens how often? Once a year. And this is the only day of the year that the high priest can enter what? The most holy place. And if you'll remember the diagram or the blueprint of the tabernacle, you've got the courtyard tent, you've got the tabernacle, you have the altar, the basin, then the door to the tabernacle. And when you enter that, you're in what part of it? The holy place. All right, what's in there? Altar of incense. And that altar of incense is going to be important as it relates to this lesson tonight. So then you have what separating the holy place from the most holy place? Curtain or veil. All right. So the high priest could only go or enter the veil one time a year. And he could only do it after doing certain things. What did he have to do first before he could enter there? He had to offer a sin offering for himself, which was done with what kind of animal? A bull. And then the ram was a burnt offering, right? If you'll remember back, the sin offering, was that whole thing sacrificed or burned upon the altar?
No.
Only certain parts, right? And then the burnt offering, the whole thing was burned upon the altar, right? All right, after he did that, in order to... Well, first of all, God told Moses to tell his brother Aaron, don't come into the most holy of place, right? Lest you what? Lest you die. He says, enter not in. But then he goes on to say, tell him to enter in, right? After he does his thing. So that's not a prohibition for the high priest not to ever go in there, right? What he's getting at is, if you're going to enter in here, there are certain things you have to do to be able to enter there. And if we've learned anything about all the sacrifices and all the laws, all that stuff that we've been studying about, it's that one has to become what to be in the presence of God? Cleansed. They have to be holy. Be holy, for I'm holy, right? And that is because God cannot do what? He can't tolerate it. He can't be around it. He can't commune with unclean, right? He cannot. He just can't. He can't do it. So he has to offer those sacrifices for himself, and then he has to. Does he get to wear the usual priestly robes? No. You think about the priestly robe. What were they like that they wore every day? What color was it, first of all? And then it had the priestly robes you wore every day. It was more than just white. We didn't have, of course, you had the sash. You had the breastplate with all the stones on it, right? You had the big turban hat, right? And so that was almost, wouldn't you say that would make the priest really stand out? Almost kind of like royalty. I mean, it wasn't something that a common Jew would wear, right? But he couldn't wear that on this day to go into the most holy place, could he? He had to remove that. He had to do what after that? He had to bathe. He had to wash himself with water. So, and that symbolized what? Cleansing. And then he had to put on what? Right. Now that wouldn't have meant anything really special or made it stand out, right? Because, and do you think that has, is that significant in any way? I guess I'm just asking for opinion there. Yeah, looking more common too, because he's entering into the presence of God, right? I'm kind of getting at all that because we're going to compare it to Jesus later, all right? So he had to put that on, and then he could enter in, right? When he entered in, how does the incense play in? Was there a special recipe? Do we remember back from our previous lessons? A special recipe for the incense?
There was, and it couldn't be duplicated.
That's right. Who was the only one that could make it? Right. There were certain people trying to make it, right? Especially just the way God gave the recipe, right? It couldn't be duplicated. So he took that in, took some coals off the altar, right? And the purpose of this was said when he goes into the most holy place, was that incense to be burned and to cloud the place up, right? Now, why did the place have to be clouded up? Yeah. It was really for the priest, high priest protection, right? In that, who was in the most holy place? God was in there, right? And God said he was where in there? Over the mercy seat. And where was the mercy seat? Top of the Ark of the Covenant. It was God like literally sitting on that seat. I mean, the presence of God was in there, right? But it was obviously, I guess, something that could be seen without the smoke, right? I mean, God showed as much of his presence to Moses before, right, as he could without killing Moses, right? So it could be seen, but this incense was to cloud it up so as protection for the high priest because no man can see God and survive, right? All right, so once he was cleansed and once the sacrifices were made, he could go in. He had to go in with the incense for it to cloud the place up. And then we get to this whole blood business again, right? And what did he have to do with the blood from the sacrifice? All right. What? It was even specific to the side that he was supposed to put it on, right? The east side. And then seven times he had to put it or sprinkle it with his finger before the mercy seat, right? Why the blood? What was he making an atonement for? What does sin require? Blood, right? A life, right? And life is, Brother Billy says it all the time, life is in the blood. Alright? And you think about all the sacrifices they make and they have to do, it is a bloody mess. Right? So, blood is put on the east side of the mercy seat and then sprinkled seven times before the altar, or before the mercy seat, rather. All right, so after this is done, then what does the priest do? So this was this all for just the priest? He's going to make another sacrifice, though, right, for the people, right? So he had to be cleansed and make atonement for his own sins before he could be holy enough to do it on part of the all the people, right? Compared to the sacrifices for himself that Aaron had to make on that day, turn over to Hebrews chapter 7 and look at, somebody read verse 27 specifically and compare what he had to do to Jesus. Hebrews 7:27. So comparing what the high priest had to do to make atonement for his own sin, Jesus, in comparison, did not have to do that, right? Because he didn't sin. He didn't sin. It was not necessary because there was no sin. No, it didn't mean that at all. That's right. But he was accused by who? In particularly, the higher authority Jews, if you will, right? And we know why they accused him of it, right? It was out of just pure jealousy, right? And you remember at that point, they bragged. You know, they were more about that they had the law than actually the purpose of the law, right? Just like at some point they bragged about the temple itself, having the temple itself, rather than why they had the temple, right? So by the time Jesus came, they had wandered way off of God's purpose for all this, right? In establishing the Day of Atonement and all the sacrifices and the things that they had to do, I mean, it is just a foreshadowing. You wonder why it had to be done in a certain way. Well, ultimately, God required those very things that they had to do in the form of the perfect sacrifice down the road for all, right? Was there anything different that Jesus did than they did, really, symbolically? No. It's just that we're going to talk about the goat for sin offering and then the scapegoat here in a minute. Well, Jesus was both, wasn't he? And at the same time, he was also the high priest to do it, right? So he offered himself up. So he had to make sacrifices for the people after this. So What did he have to take to do that? What were the items? He still had a sin offering and a burnt offering, right? And what animals were involved? Goats. Yeah, goats. A ram for a burnt offering and then the two goats for the sin offering, right? So, two goats were taken for that for the people. And one was offered as a sin offering, and one was going to be what we refer to today as the scapegoat, right? Now, that's not what they called it. I guess that's a more modern term, if you will, scapegoat. We use it in talking about what? If we call somebody a scapegoat, it means they did what?
They took the blame.
Yeah, they took the rap. They took the blame, right? Whether they were involved or not. Okay, so you had the two goats. Now, when he brought the goats before the tabernacle, it says that to decide which one was going to be the sin offering and which one was going to be the scapegoat, how was it determined?
Through
casting lots. What does that mean? Well, I want to hear your guess. Maybe it had something to do with the Urim and the Thummim. Am I saying that right? Maybe. What was that used for?
Inquiring
of the Lord. So maybe that's how they did it. Maybe that's how it was done. But somehow or another, they cast lots to determine which. It wasn't just, well, I think I'll use this one for this, and I'll think I'll use this. Yes. Yeah. God had a heavy hand in it, I would say. Right? So once that was decided, one was offered up for atonement, right? And then the scapegoat. What did the priest have to do with the scapegoat? Right. Yeah. He had to put both hands on the goat's head, right? And confess the sins of the people, symbolically transferring their sins to the goat, right? And then that goat was going to be what? Right. You had somebody that was actually going to lead the goat out of the camp, right? We'll talk about that person in a minute. But they were going to be taken, led out of the camp to wander in the wilderness. And then what was that going to symbolize? Right. Parting of the sin. It's gone away. It's done away with, right? Hopefully never to return. What kept the goat from coming back? What would happen if it did come back? Well, we're not told about the Bible, but later I understand in doing this, maybe at some point in time some goats did come back, and in their tradition it became where they would take the goat out of the camp and they would lead him into the wilderness off of a cliff. Right? So he wouldn't come back. You can imagine if it did come back, right? They made sure it couldn't come back. They didn't want that goat back. Can you imagine if that goat walked back into the camp? You know, goats have a mind of their own, right? But at some point, they got to where they were doing that, from what I understand, through secular reading. Back to our next question, I'm kind of just working my way down the question. Who was allowed in the most holy place? We said the high priest, and how often? Once a year. Let's turn back over to Hebrews chapter 9. I want to compare how many times or how often that the high priest, or the Levitical high priest, could enter, and then how often Jesus could, right? So, Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 7. All right, and then verse 12, let's compare that to Jesus.
Not through the blood of goats and calves, but through his own blood, he entered the holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption.
All right, and then in 25 and 26 of Hebrews 9.
Nor was it that he would offer himself often, as the high priest enters the holy place year by year with blood that is not his own. Otherwise, he would have needed to suffer often.
So, the high priest could enter into the most holy once a year, and he had to do that every year, because the sacrifice from the previous year wasn't good enough to take away the sins forever, right? How quick did uncleanness and unholiness and sin work its way back into the camp? Well, after all the atonement sacrifices were done, and the scapegoat was let out, and then the parts of the sin offering that weren't completely burned up had to be taken outside of the camp and disposed of. What did the priest and the person that led the goat out and the person that took the remains of the sin offering outside the camp have to do? They had to do it all over again, right? A purification process all over again. And why was that? Yeah. So the way God looks at sin is it doesn't just affect the soul of a person. It affects everything, right? It affects the camp. It affects their physical lives as well, right? And so this was a continual thing. This had to be done daily, and sometimes more than once daily, depending on what they did, what they touched, what condition they were in. Jesus had to do it how many times? From what we just read, once, right? And he offered himself up to do that. And it was through his blood. And he only had to do it once because it was his blood. The perfect sacrifice. It was good enough to take away sins for how long? Forever. That's the difference. Would we understand Hebrews at all if it weren't for Leviticus? I don't know that we could. Not truly understand it and appreciate it. So we talked about why incense was burned in the most holy place, and that was for the protection of the high priest. It was to cloud it up so he could not see the presence of God, lest he die. By comparison, how can we approach the throne of God today? Boldly. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 19. Somebody wants to read that for us.
Therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Jesus.
So, that is a big contrast to how they could approach it, right? They could not approach God boldly. Because they were always what? With the exception of what they did immediately before they did and cleanse themselves. How our cleansing is a what kind of cleansing? Continual, right? It's a continual cleansing. Our cleansing is a continual cleansing. They had to continually cleanse. See the difference? Come on.
This event that
Jesus is our mediator, right? Why is he a better mediator than, if you want to call the high priest a mediator, why is he better at it? He's tempted yet without sin. He was God, but he lived as a man. Was he tempted as a man? He was, like you said. Was he tempted in every way we're tempted? Yes. So, that was after the order of Melchizedek. That's a whole other lesson, but it simply means it's a continual. It's forever. There had to be different high priests under the Levitical high priest. It was different people because they died, right? There had to be a new one when one died. Right. He was chosen by God. It's not basic. Jesus could not be a priest on earth, could he? In the Levitical sense. He was not of the Levitical, of the tribe of Levi, was he? He didn't qualify. Right? He didn't qualify. But he's our mediator. He's better at it because he's been on both sides of the coin, right? God and man, tempted as we are, yet sinless. When you have a mediator in court and you have a lawyer, why is he better at dealing with the judge than you are? He knows the law, right? He talks the talk. He speaks the speak, right?
He stays in the most holy place.
Right.
He was ever lives to make intercession for us, so he's always in the presence of God. You know, I would think a conscientious Jew would really look forward to the Day of Atonement. You know, because there's that consciousness of sin, that reminder of it, and now this will be taken away, and at least for a brief time. But what a blessing it is to have someone who is always there, every hour of every day.
Right. And I find it interesting that even though the Jews today, they don't practice the sacrificial system, there's not the temple system and all that, but they still, their most holy day is Yom Kippur. It's the Day of Atonement, right? And there is something so much better. Like you said, the conscientious Jew, you would think they would be the ones to go, it's so awesome that we don't have to do this anymore. Right? And, if they're going to recognize that, why don't they do all the other stuff too?
And you talked, David, quite a bit about this being a pattern or a symbol of things that were to come and so forth. But above all, the chief point of all of this is folks shall need something better. And that was it. I mean, I want you to see the inadequacy of this, just by virtue of having to do this over and over again. And so hope that was supposed to prepare them for the Christ and then have them eager to receive him. Of course, some did, but unbelievably, sadly, so.
Absolutely. Just so much better in every way. And all this was a pattern to lead to that. And like you said, sadly, some, the very ones that should have known better than anybody how much better the new system is than the old are the very ones that didn't accept it. And were the ones that, ultimately led to him being sacrificed. Called for his crucifixion. So on this Day of Atonement, how did the ordinary Israelite have to observe that day?
Sabbath,
Right. They didn't work, and they had to, it says, some versions say, afflict their souls. I think it just means to humble themselves that day. They were to cease everything they were doing and give concentration to what was being done, what was being done on their behalf, and why it was to be done. And not just them only, who else had to do the same thing? The visitors that were visiting with them were required to do that as well. So that's how the common Israelite had to observe that day. So, question number 16 says, and we've been doing it all along, but compare and contrast the role of the high priest and Jesus. Somebody want to take that one? And then I want to read a few passages from Hebrews. Yeah, Hebrews. That's how you do it. Well, read, if you're going to turn to 7, read 11 through 28.
In chapter 7?
Yes, Hebrews chapter 7. Well, and you can read all the way through verse 5 of chapter 8, if you want to. So 7, 11 through...
We are going to cover Hebrews.
We're going to cover at least that part of it.
All right, 7, 11 through 8, 5.
Yes. So, is there anything that reading doesn't sum up about question number 16? Jesus was everything that the Levitical high priest was not.
I'll add chapter 6, verse 19.
Okay.
High priests under the law were not sure and steadfast.
have examples of ones that just were not doing their job, right? That weren't getting the job done. We have examples of that. Jesus got the job done, continues to get the job done. He's a priest after the order of Melchizedek, not the Levitical priesthood. He himself can save through not the blood of bulls and goats, but by his own blood. And he can remove people's sins, not the scapegoat. He can do all the things that the high priest and the blood of bulls and goats could not do. In contrast. So compare and contrast the sacrifice of the sin offering in Jesus. If somebody wants to read Hebrews chapter 9, and I had verses 11 through 28. So again, his blood was able to do once and for all the things that the blood of the bulls and goats and all those sacrifices could not do. Blood was required, just like it was then, but it was done once. Do we have anything that we do on a regular basis to help us to remember that blood that was shed? Lord's Supper, right? Every Sunday, right? Jesus was all the things that the high priest were not. He was all the things that those sacrificial animals in their blood were not. Let's see if there's anything else we'll cover. What was typified by the bodies of the sin offering being burned outside the camp? Since we're talking about Jesus. Where did Jesus suffer? Outside the camp, outside the gate. All right, and the last question, described the threefold imperfection of the ritual of the Day of Atonement. If somebody wants to take number 20. Mm-hmm. Not a bad one. Well, I'll tell you what I put. Priests, they had to offer sacrifices for their own sins. Jesus did not because he had no sin. Sacrifice. Bulls and goats were imperfect. Jesus was the perfect sacrifice. And then the repetition of the sacrifice, they had to do these things daily. Jesus had to do it once. All right, we're about out of time. Does anybody have anything else that they want to talk about? Did we hang covered? I think we covered it pretty well. All right. Appreciate your participation. Next week, lesson 23, and Shelby will be teaching that one.